on Becoming of Age, the podcast. A cautionary tale. Listen to what they say, then do the opposite. Your hosts, Colin Flynn and John M. Craig.
Wow, that stuff's thumping. I can't believe it. We're 33 episodes. Yes. Into a show, two guys that have never met each other. I'm in Iowa, and John Michael Craig is all the way out in New Jersey.
Red Bank, New Jersey. Represent.
Sound a little rough and rough-throated today.
You know, I'm not. I'm literally laying down. I'm sitting in a chair with my legs up on my bed and my head upside down craned, because that's the kind of mood I'm in. And I'm like through the entire hour in 5 minutes like this.
All right.
Probably a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to work, but, you know,
I'm doing whatever I can to just get through today.
Yeah, so yesterday, you had a long day yesterday. You're in the midst of the relocation effort.
Yeah, that's what's happening in my life, you know? Okay, I want to preface this with... I want to apologize to some of our listeners in advance, okay?
Okay.
Because what I'm about to talk about is real first world fucking problems, okay? I'm like really, I have this agreement with my ex-wife. It's a six-month agreement that I get to move in to the pool house, second story of the pool house. It's something that we had built when I was still married and living there. It's been just over 4 years since I moved out. So since I moved out, her parents sold a very nice home with a lot of furniture, and there's more furniture in there and more stuff. She asked me the other day, what bed are you going to use? And I said, I guess my bed is a king size bed. It's not going to fit up there in the through the stairs. You know, like there are these pull down attic stairs. And I said, okay, I guess the queen size bed that's up there. I said, do the posts come off the bed? You know, like around the. It's like this big wooden. It's not so ornate, but it's a 4-post bed. And I said, yeah, but do the posts? She's like, no, it's a 4-post bed. I know, but I said, at the top, I think you can screw them up. She's like, no. I said, well, she's like, what's wrong with the, what's that? What's wrong? I said, I'm not a big fan of a 4-post bed. I just, it's nice. It's really nice. I said, well, if it had a canopy, like a nice sheer canopy, I'm not asking for one. I'm just saying that would be nice. I like that. That's kind of cool. She's like, not all 4-post beds are meant to have a canopy. That's a nice bed. I'm like, no, it is. It's just, oh, never mind. It's great. I'm going to be sleeping in the queen bed, in the 4-post bed. But I'm like, all of a sudden, it's like, what was on the piece of paper and the agreement? Oh no, this is the reality. Like, it was just like, you know what? Fuck you and your pool house. Fuck you. I'm going to live in my car. I don't know where I'm going to put all my stuff. So now I have all my stuff, and I moved yesterday. I'm exhausted. My son Cameron helped me, but all he wanted to do after taking a PSAT test, he's doing SAT prep, and you know, I dropped him off at like 9 o'clock in the morning, picked him up at like 2 p.m. He's like, can I hang out with my friend Thomas? Yeah, Cameron, I really need you to help me move, like now, like I need you. So he was a little pissed off about that, and then, so he helped me, and then, you know, he said to Cameron, I said, Cameron, what's going on? I said, you're a strong kid. Like, he's like, I'm weak. No, you're not. He's just being a teenager. Like, I'm weak. Right. I can't do it. He's like, you know, Mom beat me. He's 15. He's 5'10". He was like somewhere between 170 and 180. And he said, you know, Mom beat me in an arm wrestle. I'm like, what? Your mom beat you in an arm wrestle? She's like 5'4". No way. I don't know how much she weighs. I'm not even... Even if I did know how much she weighs, I wouldn't say it on here. Even though no one I know that knows her listens to this or would sell me out. But he was just fucking with me. And I bought the whole thing. I was like... I was about to call his mom. Hey, Andre, did Cameron... Did you beat him in an arm wrestle? So everything was fine. And I had Ray's golf swing shirt van... At this point, it's kind of shitty out, rainy, and Kylie's like, she slept over her friends. Can you pick me up? And then, Kylie, I can't. My car's at Ray's house. I've got the golf swing shirt van with a bunch of furniture in it. Like, I really want to drive it with all the furniture and whatever. I'm trying to move out. So then I finally decided to do it. Now Cameron's on his own. Now he's a type 1 diabetic. His blood sugar was a little low. I was cooking something for him, and I said, Cameron, can you just bring this stuff from the pool house down to the basement for storage? And he calls me up. Kylie and I are in the car, have him on speakerphone, and he's like, Dad, I'm in the basement. And I feel he's a type 1 diabetic. And he's like, I'm like, I'm angry. I'm like, Cameron, fucking spit it out. Like, I'm freaking out. I'm like, did he trip? Did he fall? Is he underneath the piece of furniture? Like, what the fuck? He wears these like very loose fitting shoes. They're Sperry's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the brand. You know, they make those Doc shoes. And I guess he was carrying a box of like paperwork and stuff. Probably my taxes that I haven't done in a really long time. So I'm and he tripped and he fell into a wall. It's a sheetrock wall over like block cement. And there's a big hole in the wall. So he didn't really get hurt. He was upset he was going to get in trouble. And I was so relieved. I was so relieved that he wasn't having like a diabetic coma, that he wasn't like on the floor bleeding under furniture. I was very concerned. Like, I don't even, like, even though I'm talking about it now, I still don't find it funny, because it's, I don't know, as a parent, if you've ever had that moment where you think something's a lot worse than it is because of how someone communicated it to you, like, and you're not there.
Yeah.
Freaked me the fuck out. So I'm overwhelmed by this move, and I've got it really, I'm very fortunate to be able to do this, but the 6 month is going to, months seem like they're going to fly, and I'm not even in there yet, and I'm not out of here. So I'm overwhelmed.
That is plenty of reason to be overwhelmed when you're headed to the ex-wife's fucking pool house. It just in and of itself, even if you had a moving company that was coming to pick your shit up, I would still be stressed just over the whole idea of it. So,
and that's, she said something about it too last night. She's like, well, she was helping and she kind of wanted me to get out of there, and she wanted to go to sleep, and she had just gotten home from seeing the movies and from seeing a movie with a friend, and then she saw the movies, all of them. She saw every movie last night. Downloaded into her brain. You haven't heard about it yet. It's in beta. I don't know how they reached out to her. So she was just like, she and Kylie were moving a desk. One of these shitty desks that was like top heavy, and they're going down these like Bilco doors, you know, the stairs to the basement. Yep. And Kylie's at the bottom of it. And I'm like, no. And now Kylie's taller than her mom. I don't know if she's stronger than her mom. But And she's like, you guys, stop. Why do you have to do it? This is bullshit. Kylie's like 13. She can do it. It was like, it's not a matter of she's a girl and she can't do it. It's just that she's at the bottom. You're at the top. It's awkward. I don't want this piece of shit desk that should be thrown in the garbage at this point right now to fall on top of Kylie. So I said, look, the desk is awkward. She's like, the whole thing is awkward. And I'm like, you said yes to this. I threw it out. Okay, is it going to be 6 months of this shit?
Yeah, it sounds like maybe.
Anyway.
If you can disappear a lot, it won't be 6 months of that. If you're doing what you're planning on doing, getting out there and,
I'm going to work like a Jamaican in the 80s. You know how they had seven jobs? They know that stereotype that doesn't even exist anymore. I guess they work so much, they got all the money.
It starts to rain. John's going to be down in the city selling umbrellas. Umbrella.
$5, whatever it takes. I'm going to start with delivering Amazon packages for Amazon Flex. Then I'm going to do some Uber and Lyft. Then I'm going to head over to New Brunswick, New Jersey, where Rutgers University is. I'm going to deliver food for DoorDash. Then I'm going to head, what am I going to do? And then I'm going to go over to Home Depot and for the next morning to get some like day laboring work, you know.
Interesting. Day laboring, that's not something that really comes up real often when Americans in general are willing to do that. I'm a day laborer, you know what I mean? I did that out in California. I was out in Los Angeles, and they used to have this spot back in the day, in Malibu, actually. There's a spot where they would, you could just go stand out in this parking lot, and these guys, these contractors and stuff would come by and would hire day laborers. And if you were worth a shit, they would. It's the potential that you could end up getting hired by one of these contractors or construction companies or, you know, carpentry type places. And when you went out there to stand out there, typically about probably 80 or 90% of the people that were standing there trying to get a gig were Mexicans. You know, they couldn't speak English. What we call undocumented workers these days. Back then.
Yeah. I look, to me, I like the idea of someone, hey, they have a skill or they can do a job, they can do it well, and you give them cash, a fair wage for that thing, and then they go. I like the idea. Let's start a new, can we start a society or country, you know? Like, you know, we'll have a couple of doctors in the community, so it's all barter, and I don't even know if we, let's get to a point where there's no cash. We just,
no cash?
Yeah.
It's like Bitcoin?
Let's call James Altucher. And we'll do a Bitcoin society and country, nation of Bitcoin. I don't know, just something, like, I think in the move, I'm just sick of, like, I was like, well, what about my computer and my camera? Well, I'll just get a computer and a camera for the job when I need the job. But it won't be mine. Who gives a fuck?
I have too
much stuff,
and
I don't have that much stuff. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
So yeah, you could be out in the parking lot, and when you know, the Mexicans do something cool, you can take a picture and you can sell it back to them. So I don't know.
There's I've wanted to photograph the Mexican day laborers.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, if I walked up to a bunch of day laborers who may not be legal with a camera, like a DSLR with a, you know, like a 24-70 or millimeter lens, I don't know how willing they'd be to have me take their picture.
That probably wouldn't be. I was in, I told you that we talked a little bit about it last show, but this friend of mine in Dallas that was doing the eye exam stuff in the Latino community, it's been some years ago, but he used to go to, there's a Catholic church down there that was, I think it was St. Edward's, but anyway, it was down next to the barrio, kind of, there's an area of Dallas that's called Deep Ellum, which is, they kind of mispronounced for many years, Elm, E-L-M, with Southern accent, to the point so much that they've just kind of added another L-U-M, so it's now Deep Ellum with this area. And it's kind of an interesting area because there's a lot of clubs and a lot of the darker side of nightlife is in Deep Ellum generally. But next to that area is where the barrio, where the Latino community lives. And anyway, so Jonas Gonzalez would go to the church, and he would set up in the basement. They would set up and they had like this church had like 10 masses a day. It was just, this place was hopping. It was a very, very active Catholic church. And they used the basement of this place like it was the bazaar, sort of, you know, where you could go after church and you could go down there and eat tamales, or, you know, there's all kinds of things going on food wise and then all sorts of services. And there were companies in there that were, you know, like trying to make a buck. And he was one of those guys. So he would set up this auto-refractor thing that he got from the ophthalmologist, the licensed ophthalmologist guy, which is this big piece of equipment. They shoot the little laser thing kind of at your eye, and it, boop, tells you, you know, what your prescription is. If you've ever had a recent eye exam, yeah, they use those a lot. And so anyway, we would, he wanted me to come along and help. He said, I need a token Anglo. You're going to just, he goes, if you have a sport coat and a tie, that would be great. If you wear the sport coat and the tie, he goes, everybody will think that you're the doctor, you're the token Anglo.
Right.
So people would line up. We had lines that were like, you know, a lot of times there would be like 50, 60, whatever, people standing in line waiting to get their eyes examined. And so I would walk up there, and they would walk up to me, and, you know, they'd usually say something, and I would be like, está bien, see, set that key, you know, which, you know, and do these, I had these basic rudimentary Spanish things that I would say to these people, and they would, you know, I would go, escudero, derecho, which, you know, your right or left hand, and I would hold my hand up, you know, to say what to do. And they'd put their hand up to the machine, and then they would start to say whatever it is, you know, the letters they say. And there's a big wide range of the way they pronounce the letters in different regions of Mexico. But it would be like A, B, K, you know, and then some of them Z is Z, and some of them it would be, I can't remember, I think it was Zeta or something like that. Anyway, I don't know. But we'd do these freaking eye exams, and it was just... crazy how many people were there, and the amount of, I don't know, they bring the whole family, which I thought was cool. But we would end up after this, we would always go get something to eat afterwards, or stop at this, they had this little mercado thing that they knew about, which was right in the barrio. So I went with Jonas, and we had this person that worked with us, Alicia, and she lived in that neighborhood, blonde Mexican girl, she's real pretty, but anyway, they took us down to this place where we could go get this really kick-ass food in this, it was a little grocery store thing, Mercado thing. And so we'd get in there, and I was just, I mean, there's all kinds of cool stuff in there to take pictures of. And I had Jonas's dad's camera, and I was walking around taking pictures. And all of a sudden, I got like three guys that are like right next to me, looking at me, these Mexican dudes that are like, you know, what the fuck's this guy doing, you know? And Grandpa comes walking in, and he talks to them in Spanish, you know, blah, 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 diffuses the situation. And then he looks at me, and he goes, don't take pictures.
Right.
I'm like, okay, I get it. I understand now. But I gained a huge respect when I was down there for the Latino community and the quote unquote undocumented worker, because so many of those people came, a lot of them came because, and we used to use a term, migrant worker. Right. The United States invited migrant workers to come up here and pick our food, you know, and it was a kind of a mixed up system, because even though the government invited them to come, they didn't have a good system for trying to get anybody back. They didn't really pay attention. They just knew that they needed to get whatever, however many thousand people to come up and do this shit, but they didn't have a great way to get them back. So yeah, a lot of them stayed. And then they, you know, wanted to have friends and family and all that sort of thing, which they're very family oriented people. But you know, this, I think it's really disingenuous for any American to go, fuck these people, let's get them out of here, fucking. Dude, you know, for one thing, most of us in America are fat fucking Americans because we've been eating the food that they picked. and it would, you know, that can of beans that you went down to the grocery store and paid 78 cents for would cost you like $5, if not for that. But and then I just, being around a lot of it, you know, these people work their ass off. Out in California when I was out there, and I'd do the shit with these guys, you could see how far a dollar would go. You know, you talked about, it's like a first world problem thing. We get upset because, you know, any of us, we're trying to make ends meet and trying to make a dollar stretch to a certain point. These guys, they would drive out somewhere and they would cut this cactus on like Sunday, and their wives or whoever, I don't know, but they would take these pieces of cactus, and they would, I don't know, they fried it, but anyway, they took this cactus stuff and would roll it in tamales, which they got totally, you know, they got the cactus stuff totally free, but they would load it in, you know, taco shells or whatever, and put, you know, stuff, hot stuff on it, whatever it was. And I watched them eat it for a couple of days when I was doing this stuff, and finally I said, hey, give me a try. I want to see what that's like. And so one of them gave me one, and it was really delicious. But it was something that they'd gone out and picked out in the desert somewhere. They'd gone out somewhere, found these cactus, and free food. And that's what they ate primarily throughout the week. These guys that were kicking ass and taking names on the construction stuff. You know, these guys are such hard workers. It's unbelievable. But anyway,
that's my... I've seen Mexican guys fishing here into the Navesink River.
Yeah.
Fishing for fish, for food.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't get it exactly as far as like the law. You know, in a lot of areas of the country, well, we had this happen here. We had these Hmong dudes that were, they'd just gotten over here, and they didn't know that, I guess they didn't understand that you can only, you know, there are limits on the amount of fish that you can catch. And these guys were like trying to basically catch as many fish as they could, and were, and they got, you know, caught by the whatever the DNR, somebody, Department of Natural Resources guy went down and caught a bunch of them. But I think they ended up dropping the charges because they figured out that these people actually didn't know what the fuck, you know. Yeah. What do you mean you can't take as many as you want? That's crazy. But
you know, down by me, there's a lot of wooded areas throughout Middletown, New Jersey, which is the town I'm moving into. You mail me a letter, my address will still be Red Bank when I move into the pool house. But it's Middletown, it's spread out. And some of this area, they're heavily wooded, but there's still homes, you know. And I was riding my bicycle it was one of these nicer days that we had last week. That was like 74 degrees in New York. It was like 40 degrees in like in LA, and 74 degrees here. It's like, what? And I was noticing on McLeese Road that has a plenty of houses, but in a wooded area, it said no hunting. And I'm thinking to myself, how would you? Of course, there's no hunting. There's a road here. The woods aren't that deep. There's a house there. You have to be a special kind of fucking hunter, like, who really loves to kill innocent fucking deer
and like to shoot a bow or a fucking gun, if you decide that this looks like a good place to hunt, where you just pull up your fucking truck off the side of the road, there's no path, there's nowhere to park your car on the side of the road. Like, to me, it just seemed like a no-brainer. You don't need that sign. But to, that also tells me that someone tried to hunt there.
Oh, yeah.
At one point, someone decided they're going to shoot a gun here at a deer, or they killed a deer.
Yes.
Otherwise, why is the fucking sign there?
This is the struggle I have a little bit. I am, and this has been a big news item thing this week, but I am not a big fan of a lot of things, most of the things lately that the NRA has done. But I do realize that people are going to hunt, and as far as hunter safety goes and knowing how to properly handle a gun, how to hunt with each other, what the safety rules are. Me, somebody, I've told the story before, I've been shot, at and hit. Shit at and missed a couple times, but anyway, you know, what they do, what they teach the NRA hunter safety course is golden. I've taken it a couple times. Should have taken it way before, when I was even younger still, but if somebody is a hunter, that, you know, they making that a requirement, I mean, maybe the NRA isn't the only entity that can teach that, but I don't know, there are some positive things there that I see, right, as far as hunting goes, that I would hate to see go away all the way. But yeah, there's some knucklehead shooting his gun off the road there.
What's Dick Cheney up to? Is he did he take the class? Is he teaching the class? Is he an honorary member of the NRA? Is it too soon? Too soon to? No one remembers
do
that.
Do NRA joke. I think he probably is a member. And I kind of Googled him the other day because I thought.
But didn't he shoot his friend or got shot? He did shoot his friend. Inadvertently shot a friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he is still alive. I was like, is that dude still alive? Because he had all these big heart issues at one point. But he had a heart transplant, a full-on heart transplant, I guess.
Did he get a baboon heart?
Gave him a pig heart. Yeah. Something fitting of his
Well, you know who's playing Dick Cheney in the movie, right?
No.
Christian Bale.
Really? There's a movie with Christian Bale?
I don't know when it comes out, but it's, you know how Christian Bale has, like, he dropped down to like 115 pounds for like The Machinist.
Yeah,
he gained
yeah.
weight for that. I don't know what movie it is, but
yeah,
I'm trying to figure out his age.
Christian here. Bale's probably got to be
40-ish. No. Dick Cheney. Sorry.
Oh.
No. Born in 1941.
So that would make him 78 or something like that.
I like it so much better when Wikipedia actually has the age too.
I don't want to figure this out.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to do the math.
That's like late
77.
Or 77. Okay, yeah.
No. Yeah, 77. That's right. It's okay. 2018.
See, I had it right the first time.
You're right.
Pretty close.
Yeah. I don't. This would be the third week in a row talking about guns. I don't really. I just, the hunting thing just threw me. But although I think all of the, I think custodians in a school should be packing. I think custodians. Actually, as a matter of fact, I don't know, probably a small percentage, but custodians in schools look like they should be triple checked sometimes. Yeah. I've seen some of them look like they should be quadruple checked. Like, should they be around children?
When you're saying this, I'm picturing a guy that worked in the school system that I went to school at, and he was the assistant custodian, became the head guy, and was there for like 30 years. I would have seriously thought there was something there going on. He's got some, check his crawl space. There could be some bodies there. He's a weird fucking dude.
Just something, like, a lot of times, not all. I would be thrilled if there's a school custodian listening to this right now that does not fit that stereotype and is really angry at what I'm saying. It's just, and I'm not just talking about when I was going to school in the late 70s, early 80s. I'm talking about to this day when I go to my children's school. Yeah, I've met a couple of guys that are nice, but every now and again you'll see one where you're like, shit, that dude should not be in a school even when children are not around. I'm not sure that guy should have a job. Based on appearance, body language, eye contact, you know. Because sometimes I volunteer at the school and I take pictures and stuff. And I need to get like, can I get access to an outlet and whatever. It's just like...
yeah.
And, you know, and even growing up, like, and even to this day, like... there are these teachers, like the female gym teacher, always looked the same growing up.
Okay.
Butch haircut. Like, I'm sure it's not a fact, right?
I don't know. Can you picture her? Can you picture her packing heat?
I absolutely can. And I don't know that she needs to.
Yeah.
Put that AR-7 down.
I'm going to kick your ass.
She'll blow the whistle. You're just scared. You're like, I don't know what she's going to do with me.
Breaks it on her knee. Get the fuck over here.
Just climb up that rope. Climb up that fucking... Put the gun down. Climb up that rope. You've never fucking done that, you piece of shit.
You make that face like your dick feels funny, I will fucking kill you. Get up that rope.
This is why you are so insecure. That's why you didn't graduate high school.
That's a good point, though. I, you know, as this conversation has gone on, I've thought about some teachers, and absolutely, Mrs. Grau, my art teacher, who actually fucking cried when she figured out that the really cool ceramic figurines we were making were bongs. No, I'm not going to give her a gun. We had an accounting teacher.
How did she not know?
She was very naive. And then somebody, she just thought they were really cool. And then...
really cool. She was right.
Yeah, we had these like Gandalf looking things and all that stuff. And we were putting a lot of work into this shit. It was very, very cool. And then somebody spilled the beans. Mrs. Grau, they smoke weed out of
that. Wait. Did the person spilling the beans tell her because it was funny, or they were being a narc and just sort of like... or a little bit of both?
Narc. I think it was an art thing. I think that everybody, all the students knew, and then everybody talked too much. Then finally, some dickweed is like, "I'm going to tell. I'm going to." Well, yeah.
Do you have any pictures of those?
No, I don't.
That's unfortunate. But you do have pictures of a couple of Mexican guys in a store.
Yeah, only in my mind for the bong pictures. And I was really mad because I put a lot of work into one that was on the chopping list. It was actually, it just come out of the kiln, and it was looking fucking dope, you know, and I was going to smoke dope out of it. And came in, and it was smashed. Mrs. Grau was like, and then she was actually crying. So, no, I'm going to... Would I put a gun in her hand? No. We had this woman that was an accounting teacher. I'm trying to remember her name, but probably not good to say it. But anyway, put a gun in her hand. I could see her carrying a gun. I could see her packing heat. There's different teachers that I... we have a Mr. Charlson who actually had a class that was kind of like a sweat hogs kind of class. When we had people that, you know, they weren't mainstreaming kids that were troublemakers and the miscreants weren't, you know, pulled back into class and given okay, let's talk about mindfulness and you know, your trauma. That's not what went on. They ended up in Mr. Charlson's class, who was the football coach as well, and he was badass. Now him with some sort of big ass gun, fuck yeah, put it in his hands.
Right. Well, there was a teacher I had. She was my homeroom teacher my senior year of high school. Her name was Mrs. Walsh, and so I was in honors class. But they didn't have that for homeroom. Homeroom was just by your last name, you know. So. Mrs. Walsh was a typing teacher, and she was a typing teacher. This is probably 1988. I was in high school for senior year, 10 years, took me 10 years. 88, 89. My mom and dad graduated from the very same high school in 1967. They had her as a teacher. She's there. I don't know how old she is. So maybe she's in her 40s at this point, but she's an old-looking 40. Little heavy set. Short hair, spiky. She looked like Ursula from The Little Mermaid, okay? That's the kind of hair she had, white, okay. Spiky hair. But the movie hadn't come out yet, but I think they based the character on Mrs. Walsh. I should do some research. There's got to be someone graduated from my high school and became a Disney artist. And she sat there. She hated gum chewing because she was a typing teacher. And you don't chew gum and, like, have a job, right? Like, so it's like a whole thing. And everyone used to do stuff and push her buttons. Now, she was this woman that had a crutch and a boot on her foot the entire year, right? She always had one. Maybe all 4 years of high school, she had it, right? I don't know if it was like, I don't know why, you know? I don't know if it was just like, you know, that character needs to have one, and then she wasn't, I don't know. So I was a nice, quiet guy. I had long hair, like long feathered, like 80s rocker hair, you know? And I just sat in the back. I wore my black leather motorcycle jacket. I'd never even seen a motorcycle in real life. But it was cool. It was the look. And people used to, like, taunt her and stop chewing gum. And then she'd turn around and they'd be right behind her head like, chewing gum. It was a whole thing. Well, she turned around. She lost her mind one day and started yelling at me. And I was shocked because I never got in trouble. And she started calling me out for, like, chewing gum. And I fucking lost. I was so angry. I'm like, I didn't sell her. I said, wait a second. I'm not the only. It was probably more like this. I'm not the only one chewing gum. Well, what about him? What about that one? What about her? Like, just randomly point around. I'm like, I could just stand up and go in circles and point anywhere. Everyone's chewing gum except for you. And she got mad and she didn't care about anyone else. She just singled out me and was yelling at me. And then everyone in the class started hooping and hollering and the more they did that, the angrier I got. And I was like, I got worked up and then I got in trouble. And that guy that you were talking about, like the football coach who could be packing, that guy came in. He was one of the deans as well. And I got pulled out. I got in trouble for inciting a riot.
Wow.
For chewing gum. Yeah. It didn't go on my permanent record. You know, I didn't do any time. I got pulled out of my physics class. Right?
I'm glad to know this because you could be applying for a job next week at Trader Joe's, and they're going to go, "What's this about the gum thing?"
I would be so happy. That'd be great if in bizarre. I'd be thrilled if there's some manager, crew member, team captain, whatever the fuck they call them in their Trader Joe's pirate ship fucking culture. I would want them to be interviewing me. I'm like. Yes, it says here that in 1988-89, you got in trouble for inciting a riot. Can you tell me a little bit? And they just listened to the podcast. They just, oh my God, you listened to the podcast? Okay. Yeah, you're not hired though. Okay. I've listened to the podcast. Okay. Get a real job, you piece of shit. Man, so it was very bizarre to me how, like, her carrying a gun would not be okay. That would not work out because she would lose her shit and she'd end up shooting someone for chewing gum. But that same, so you know, when you're in an honors class and you get pulled out of class, so I was in physics, third period, you know, and someone came to the door, knocked on me like, yes, we'd need to see John Craig. And then everyone in the class is like, ooh, you're in trouble. I was literally in trouble. I was, because you'd figure no one in honors is in trouble. You didn't do anything wrong. And then sure enough, I did. I incited a riot. So
in those days, did that recall a did it require a call to home, or how did that work out?
I think so. You know, it's funny though. I bet my mom and dad don't remember that.
You think they'd remember a riot, but maybe not.
My mom didn't seem to remember Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Listen, I don't know how you forget Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Exactly. Yeah. How do you let that shit go? So, I don't know. It's a fucked up situation with all this that we have to have, like you said, the discussion about who's going to be packing heat and who isn't. I saw this article. We've got, Transamerica has a pretty big, the insurance company has a pretty big presence here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
They should change their name, by the way. All I think of is, transsexuals. Yeah. Okay. Right. Transamerica. Ow. What's that?
You were like the trans thing. We were talking about that.
Yeah, I get a little. Yeah, I just hear trans, and I immediately think that.
Okay, well.
Okay, but it's Transamerica. They're not nothing to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah, they get the cool building in the really cool building in San Francisco. Not so much here.
Ow.
Yeah, sorry. Not so much here. But
my foot fell asleep.
All right. So anyway, there's a guy that works there that is, I think, an IT, maybe a senior vice president or something like that in IT, technical guy. And he wrote something recently that my wife is telling me about that he says that we have already the technology to do two things. One would be a geofencing situation where we could have security set up electronically that would let schools know if somebody was on campus that shouldn't be there. And we also have technology right now that exists where they could, according to him, and this sounds a little bit out there, but they would know electronically whether someone was carrying a weapon onto the school grounds. And he said both of these technologies already exist. They're in use by, like, the NSA or, you know, people like that. And if we decided to, we could spend the money on a situation that didn't include, like a lot of people would want to have happen, didn't include people carrying guns, and we could use technology and our brains to figure this out instead of going old school gangsta. And, I was like, that probably does exist. And then I started thinking about, okay, why don't we have the money to do that? It would be really expensive, to do that at every school in the United States. But Then I started thinking, the world likes to spend money on other things, obviously. We've got, and it's his own goddamn money, but Elon Musk is shooting fucking rockets off and sending his car to Mars and missing and, doing a lot of shit like that when he could be spending the money on making schools safe. Not saying he has to. It's not his job. It's not his fucking responsibility. But just saying, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, fucking Elon Musk, Larry Ellison, all these fuckers with the Mondo mega money now, Amazon, fuck you. Spend some money on that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Well, the thing is, that, I mean, at least three of them that you mentioned, or at least two of them, Bill Gates and the Warren Buffett, they do put a lot of money into charities,
you're right.
They put a lot of money, and granted, they are getting incentives to do that, but, they've got... Both of those guys have serious fuck you money.
You are correct. It's it's probably not fair for me to say you should be given more because they are. And Bill Gates started that club where all these guys are actually going to give their money away, whatever it's called. All the millionaires or bazillionaires are pledging to when they die, they're not going to give them all the money to their kids. They're giving it to the world, which is cool. But let's start spending it on that, is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. I was just looking. I Googled Elon Musk charity, but there's a website called Inside Philanthropy, but I'm struggling to pull it up. Because I'm curious sometimes, because a lot of these guys do it and they do it kind of quietly, So you don't know how much money they're spreading around, But to me, it's like when I hear you talk about that, well, first of all, when I hear Transamerica, they have this incredible technology. I'm like, they can turn a dick into a pussy that actually gets wet and feels like a real pussy. Yo, go Transamerica. That's a win-win for everybody. Nobody loses.
Can't get off that trans.
You can't get up pregnant? Oh, fuck. That's my kind of lady. But the thing is, like, I think about that, and you go, like, okay, well, why wouldn't we just put money into the schools for education, like proper education and books and technology and, I don't know, not this charter school, that charter school. Yeah, they can work, but they work for this small. Okay, well, if you save one, if you get one kid through, it makes a difference. Yeah, great. Well, I don't know. I was a substitute teacher for half a minute, and that shit was depressing. Now, I was at PS 183 in Brownsville, Brooklyn. I don't know if I ever talked about that. Did I ever talk about that?
No, I had no idea.
I was 20, I believe I was like 23 years old, 22, 23. I had just graduated college. I didn't know where I was going. And I got a job at an alternative high school in Brooklyn. It was called Brooklyn College Academy on the Brooklyn College campus. The students, very small student body, they called their teachers by their first names. They were kids that got kicked out of their first and second school, and this was the last chance school.
Okay, sure.
Someone identified them as kids that were intelligent, that had a brain, like they could get through. So they had this school, and I was just working in the office and in the book supply room, So the two teachers, my friend's mom and her good friend, were math teachers there. Someone recommended I get my substitute teaching license. And the idea would be, on a day that one of the teachers was out last minute, they didn't have to call the school board. They had a guy there who could fill in, right? It was okay if I wasn't making copies that day. So it never worked out that I got a job. I got my substitute teaching license at the end of the school year, and I did it one full week at an elementary school at PS 183 in Brownsville, Brooklyn. I'm not sure that Mike Tyson went to school there, but it's definitely where he grew up. Predominantly black school, some Hispanic, very few white. I don't know if there were any white kids there. And they didn't give me a lesson plan. It was just, here you go. And I just stood there in front of a class with no lesson plan and no idea what to do.
Wow.
And it was a school that they were in a pilot program where some children could wear a uniform, but not every child wore a uniform. So it was kind of strange. Like, you'd have some kids showed up in a little navy blue suit, and a red tie, and they looked like black Donald Trump, a kid back, they dressed just like Donald Trump. And and at one point, like, I was trying to talk to this little kid, and I think he was wearing a suit, and then one of the kids said, he doesn't like white people, he thinks you're a ghost. I'm like, okay. And then another class, you know those stink bombs?
Sure.
Like where basically it's just like a little small vial with liquid in it, and you step on it, it smells like rotten egg or a fart.
Yes. Well,
one of the kids did that, and then someone's like, "Oh man, someone fought it. Oh, it stinks." I don't know that they talk like that. And I looked around the room, and I looked at them. I looked around the room. I said, "Oh my God, you're right. It smells terrible." And then I looked. I said, "Must be the white guy." I was the only white guy in the classroom. I'm like, I don't belong here. You know, I did actually talk to a young kid that. Was like 7 or 8 years old, and like his very queenie teacher, who was probably okay. In his like 30s, 40s. I don't know that the guy, but he was just like, he was over it, and this kid was a problem, and they treated him like he was a problem, and the teacher made fun of him, and like I know that the kid knew how to play the system, and he was playing me a little bit, but there's no question that it's like, this kid doesn't have a chance, right? He does not. Everyone in the class is against him. The teacher's against him. Yeah, he was a problem and a distraction, but that should have been dealt with at some point, you know? And I remember talking to him quite a bit, and he didn't have, from what he told me, there was not one positive male role model. And I'm not saying I was the guy for it, but it was like just this fucked up shit of like, he had older sisters, like his mom, an aunt, a grandmother, and they just talked shit about boys. Well, he's a fucking boy. What's going to happen to that kid? Right. So, and that made me really sad. And I wish I remembered the kid's name. I wish I could look him up. I'd be really curious to see what happened. But in that moment, man, you're like, the kid doesn't have a chance at 7 or 8. What's going to happen with that kid?
Yeah, there's a lot of situations like that where the kids are just basically fucked from the beginning. And, you know, you hear these people that want to tell you, you know, it's all about, you know, when you get to whatever, you know, you become an adult, it's all about your attitude and it's all about your gratitude and it's all about, you know, you can change the world and you can be anything you want to be. But when you start off like that, you know, Jesus, it's pretty tough road to hoe.
Well, the other day I was Googling something, and I came across a photograph taken by this famous photographer, Mary Ellen Mark. And I forgot the name of the photo, but essentially it's a photo, I don't know if, so it's a 9-year-old girl somewhere down south, like North Carolina or something, standing in like a little kiddie pool. And her cousin, who's like chubby, she's sitting down up against the edge of the pool. And the girl standing up is smoking. It's a black and white photo, smoking a cigarette in her left hand with her other arm crossed over. It's like, it's a great photograph, right? But there's a question like, here this photographer is just capturing the moment. And I found an article, what happened to this woman? And she's like, maybe 33, 34 now. And she had a fucked up childhood, obviously, as she's confidently smoking her cigarette. And yeah, she's been in jail. She had all kinds of shit going on, you know? And it was really sad and tragic. Like, I mean, this girl was poor and had shitty people around her, you know? And that had no business parenting. It's just, what are you supposed to do? You can't save everyone, but I mean, I'm upset about having to fucking move into my ex-wife's pool house with a 4-post bed, man. I don't know if I'm going to get through.
And you don't have a sheer cover for it, so, you know.
No, I don't have one of those canopy sheer white. Oh, it'd be so nice. So peaceful.
Yeah, you could leave the windows open and let the mosquitoes in. You can just lay there.
Oh, yeah. God.
Nothing
know.
Like that.
No.
So yesterday, we had an interesting day. I went to this, these friends of ours they're like, you got to come to this this thing that this beer group does. And they call it the Blessing of the Bach. And all right, sure, we'll give that a whirl. And so went down to this local brewery, and there's a movie on Instagram, my Instagram account, that I put. Basically, a bunch of these guys they're basically old hippies, and they, somewhere in the 90s, they started this thing where this guy would brew a beer, he would brew this Bach beer. And when the keg was finished, or when they, you know, was ready to tap, ready to go, they would have this this tongue-in-cheek religious ceremony that they did, where they blessed the Bach beer. And so all these guys show up, a bunch of these old hippie dudes, they're probably, I don't know, like in the 70s, a few of them at least, two of the main guys, and they all have bought a bunch of this religious garb. Some of it was fairly elaborate.
I'm watching it right now. Yeah.
So the guy in the red, if you can see that, that looks like the Pope, he's Saint somebody, and they all give their little speeches. The one guy that came in, which I didn't get on camera right away, he's got one of those actual things from the Catholic Church that you swing back and forth, and it's got the incense in it, and the smoke's billowing out of it. Yep. So he's got that thing, he's shaking it around. There's another guy doing like a holy water thing, and then they give speeches, the blessing of the box speeches, and there's these guys, you notice they had railroad spikes that they were, the railroad spikes are attached to like a handle, and then they would take these torches and light up these railroad spikes, and then they would, I don't know what the significance of this is, if there's some pagan homage or something, but when they light up the thing red hot, and then they would put it in the beer thing, and everybody would yell, "Ah, Bach!" And it was the most bizarre thing I've freaking witnessed in a long time. It was just it was very strange.
Who's the guy with the big beard who looks like a professor? He's got a tweed jacket and smoking a pipe. Like, what was his story? Like, there's like, I'm just watching it on loop, and it's like, who was
that guy spoke in a very British accent. I don't know if he was faking it, or if he had just somehow ended up here, but he did a very good, very credible, very, very real sounding British accent, and sort of a upper London, you know, sort of well-educated British accent,
right?
And so he gave this great, he had it written down, but he gave this great speech, kind of a historical thing, and a lot of sort of puns and stuff like that were in there, and double entendres, and gave this big speech about the Bach and the beginning of the Bach and all that. So most of those people that were there, at least the guys that gave some sort of a speech, some of them were fairly short, which was probably a godsend after hearing the first couple. But and the dude with the Pope outfit, the red outfit, he was probably the best one. He gave a pretty good speech. But yeah, they got done, then they tapped this keg of Bach beer, and they had a special on the Bach beer. It was like. The big mug of it at this place was like, I don't know, it's like $5 or something like that. But yeah, it was fun afternoon. I was like, what the hell? This is some strange shit you get into. There was a couple that I'm sure had no idea what the hell was going on, and they just thought we're just going out for a beer in the afternoon. And they were, I would guess, they were probably 55, 60-ish years old. They come walking in the front door and open up the doors right when a lot of this is going on, and I'm watching them. I look over, and this guy has this look on his face like, "What in the fuck did we just walk in on?" He stayed, but I thought, you know, they're just going to turn around and leave because they look freaked out, like this is some weird cult shit that we've landed on. But
you know, it's funny. As I watch this, I look, and like, it looks like the average age at this place right now is 63. It does not look young. There are a handful of people, like there's like a couple of 20 somethings, a 30 something here and there, but everyone else fucking not young.
No. And that was the weird thing, too. That place usually, you know, it usually has got 20-somethings, 30-somethings maybe, you know, predominantly, like a lot of microbrewery-type places might have. But, that day, like I said, it was old hippie day. And a lot of those, University of Iowa is from where I live, is about a half-hour drive. And a lot of those people that were there are professorial types of some regard. And so this thing started in Iowa City, and they kind of moved it around, and they just needed a place that was a little bit bigger, and where they could, and they brewed the beer at that brewery. They made some kind of a deal with this guy to, we'll bring in this crowd, but we're going to, you know, can we brew it here? And so the brewery, Iowa Brewing Company, helped them, you know, create the Bach beer that was tapped. So yeah, a lot of them old hippies, a lot of old, I think there's definitely some professors and some people that are on staff at the University of Iowa were there, but it was an older crowd for sure. But they, and then the dude, the one, you can't see it on the video, but the one dude that had the red, you know, the Pope outfit on, I realized he had this gold necklace on, this big gold necklace thing, and I got a little closer and I looked over, and it's pot leaves. The necklace is like, you know, five beads, then a big pot leaf, five beads, then a big pot leaf. So apparently there was more going on than just the Bach with those guys, but they all had fun. It was bizarre.
It's on your Instagram post here. It says, don't ask. Listen to episode 33 of Unbecoming of Age at the 45-minute mark, and Cullen will explain what this fucking...
Don't ask. Yeah, it's I was weird. Like, you know, I
can't get into it captions? Over text. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, captions on Instagram. I thought, what am I going to put on here that makes any sense? I thought about putting Blessing of the Bach, but, you know, it's like, just don't ask. Seemed like a better thing. It's like, if you see this, you're going to, like, wonder what the hell. But I'm not sure. Yeah, can I explain it in a caption? I don't think so.
Well, while I'm here, I just came across another, and I've seen this. I actually liked it. It was, is it your grandson?
Yes.
In your studio?
Yes.
Hanging out with the headphones and the mic?
Yes.
Is that where Luca. You record from?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, yours looks like, yeah. Maybe my pool house set up for 6 months will look better, but that looks good. It looks like the right place to be recording a podcast.
It was a little noisy when we first started. The birds were chirping. I realized that I got to go for the soundproof stuff in here next summer. That's kind of I'm going to get some of the, I'm just going to soundproof it more. There's a lot of windows and whatnot, so I'm going to get some of that acoustical tile stuff and deaden up the sound a little bit so I don't get so much of that sideways noise. And this is weird to me because we're doing this during the daylight. Usually we're, you know, it's dark and I'm sitting here with a beer and got a cup of coffee and it's daylight, which is really strange for all this.
Well, it's day here. It is almost, it's 12:35 p.m. and I have a moving blanket, sound blanket, hanging over my window because I think it was last weekend I worked overnights driving Uber and Lyft, so I put that up because I had to sleep during the day. And I can't, so I haven't taken it down yet. That's what I'm just looking around here. I feel overwhelmed by stuff.
So do you think you'll actually, at the pool house, you probably won't really unpack either.
So that's, okay, so that's the challenge now. This is what is making it hard to get out of here is all the stuff that are, it's in boxes. Like, I'd be like, okay, if it's in a box and I don't need it now, don't open it, don't look at it, just put it aside, storage. I'll get, like, don't even think, like, just, I want to purge it, but I don't want to spend the time to purge it. So I think I need to, it'd be like, I haven't worn that shirt, I haven't worn that shirt, I haven't worn that in a long time, I haven't worn those shoes in a long time. Like, don't need it, right? You know, like, four pairs of shoes, you know, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
kind of a good opportunity, maybe, if you do want to, you know, divest yourself of some shit, which, you know.
I do. I already have started, but it's not a lot. It's
like the clothing thing, a lot of times I got shit, but I'll look at it and go, okay, at various points of my career, I've had to be straight up, you know, business attire. I've worked business casual. Now I can wear anything, literally anything I want. So, you know, most of the, like, summer, I'm in shorts, flip-flops, T-shirt, you know. I can wing with any of that kind of stuff. So a lot of times I'll look at things like, and I used to want to take this attitude, if I haven't worn it in a year, I should just get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
God, that's hard to do. I look at some and go, oh, that's a really nice coat, or that's really nice, you know, like button-down shirts or whatever, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Looking at them. And I used to have a bunch of polo, you know, golf shirts. I decided I wasn't a polo golf shirt kind of guy.
Right.
Got rid of all of them. I just, seriously.
Yeah. Can you wear wingtips, shirt stays, boxers, and a dickie? Just that's it. Can you? Would you? Okay, you probably couldn't get away with that, right?
No, the dickie might fly, but I would probably have to. Well, maybe. You know, if they were the right boxers, maybe.
I don't even know. Honestly, I don't even know because you and we were texting the other day, and yes. I know how we got there. I think somehow we were pissed off about Apple. You fucking said fuck dead Steve. It was like you were pissed off about fucking Steve Jobs. And a stupid fucking mock turtleneck, which I agree with, which is so fucking dumb. And then you brought up a dickie. And then it was like, I know what a dickie. What is a fucking dickie? And I had to Google it. And I was like, but would anyone wear a dickie without a shirt over it? You know, like it's just like, it's just almost like a, it's like a grown-up bib, not to be worn as a bib.
The fake, it's a fake turtleneck, you know?
Yeah.
It's bizarre that somebody thought that was necessary at some point, talked companies into making it and produced it, and then talked anybody else into buying one. It's like, come on, it's a fucking dickie.
Have you ever
You going to wear something called a dickie?
Have you ever worn an ascot? I don't think you're an ascot kind of guy.
No, I've not worn an ascot. Okay.
Do you know people? Have you known anyone to wear an ascot?
No, I've ran into a few ascots. Yeah. Yeah. Asshats, ascots. Which, no. But that, yeah, where we got started with that was somehow, I don't know, IBM got thrown into the conversation. And IBM in the 80s, you can Google this, it's a real thing. They had this rule, this law, that if you worked for IBM in the corporate office, they would stop you and check. You would have to pull up, men would have to pull up their pant leg to show that they were wearing, it was a requirement that you wear garters with your socks. The men had to wear, they wanted socks pulled up with a garter. And so they would actually, this was a requirement. It was just so fucking bizarre that they were that and buttoned down. That's strange. But they had some things that they did that were, I think, probably pretty brilliant. Obviously, it was a big company, but they used a thing that I thought was you don't hear much of these days, and maybe Gary Vaynerchuk or somebody should steal this, but they used something that they called it FUD, the FUD factor, which was fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And so they sold in an environment where they wanted to create FUD, and that would get their product sold, even though it was very expensive and there were competitors that were doing things that were, you know, with the world of computing. Microsoft was trying to convince these companies, you don't need this fucking big IBM server that's 18 grand or whatever, or even whatever, more than that in these big installations IBM used to do. But IBM did a really good job of FUD, creating fear, uncertainty, and doubt. If you don't use our products, you're going to probably fail. And you don't want to be the guy that does that. So, I don't know. I still don't wear any garters with my socks, but somebody does. Somebody's got those.
I found the thing about the garters, and then I found a Newsweek article from February 1995. What is that? 23 years ago. Have we become a nation of slobs? By Jerry Adler. When Sam Albert went to work for IBM in 1959, he assumed he'd be wearing a suit for the rest of his life. In fact, the same suit, single-breasted dark blue or gray worsted, over dark socks suspended rigidly from garters, and a white shirt with a detachable collar starched to the stiffness of an annual report cover. Well, I used to get Newsweek. My mom used to get it. It's just funny. You go back in time and look at these articles. I bet you if you looked at the cover of that article, it would feel so, it would seem so fucking dated.
Yeah, absolutely. I know a guy, as we were talking about this IBM thing, I know a guy. His name's Shelby Humbles, which I think is
what is it?
His name is Shelby Humbles.
Shelby Humbles.
Which is that a great sounding name? I don't know.
Well, I mean, no, he could be an athlete. He can be in a rock band. Like, was he in the Spin Doctors?
He could be played by Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
But anyway, Shelby. I think right now his business is he's got a big soy candle thing that he's doing that he's actually doing pretty well with, but. Back in the day, when he was a young buck, he got a gig out of college with IBM, and he was his deal was he was on the road, and he sold. He had like a I think maybe he said like a 4 or 5 state and territory area, and he was the exclusive outlet at that point for IBM's Selectric typewriter,
mm-hmm.
which was ubiquitous in the community as far as you know if you're a real business. And you were, you know, looking to do things right. You had probably at least one IBM Selectric, or, you know, several. That's the one that had the ball thing when you typed the ball that spun around and all that stuff. And they were made out of metal, and they were big, and they were, you know, it was heavy. You know, just a big, you know, big, awesome piece of machinery. And so he said he had this exclusive thing, and he was making. I think he said he was making even back then, and this would have been probably. Probably, you know, like 70s to 80s, early 80s, somewhere in there. And so he told me he was making $100,000 a year, six-figure income doing this, and just really pleasant thing going on because he had no real competition. They were the only game in town if you wanted to buy that kick-ass of a typewriter. And so he was living life large, loved it, and he said his it was the weirdest thing in the world because it was like overnight almost his entire income went away because in the 80s, all of a sudden the PC came along and everybody started using computers. And he said and the fax machine killed him too. He said that it was like in 80, would be like 85 or 86 or something like that, in that range, right around in there. He went from just king of the world to nothing in like a year. And he was, you know, no fault of his own. He said he didn't see any of it coming, didn't realize that the world was that close to, you know, becoming free of the typewriter, I guess you might say. But he said it just was like a thing that was just like almost, he felt like it was overnight. His big six-figure income, no fault of his own, just no idea what was going on. Technology changed, and boom.
What did he do? What did he do to shift and change his life and career?
Well, he went to work for a IT consulting firm, and he was still working in the business of computing, but he worked for a company that was I think at the time was Microsoft centric sort of thing, and he left IBM and worked for this other company for a while. And like I said, he's been entrepreneurial.
Entrepreneurial, yeah.
Yes, since then, and he's had some businesses, but right now he's got a soy candle thing that he's doing pretty well with, and different, obviously, selling soy candles and IBM Selectrics, but he's got some good stories about all that.
How did you know the guy? Just from local?
I back in the day, I worked with a company that he worked with as well. We worked together. Actually, there were not this. Okay, the company that I was working with, we were doing. I was with the programming and development side, creating. We come in and customize software that they were using, a lot of Microsoft type software, and we would make custom applications and web applications based on what they were doing. And he worked for another side of the company where they did training, and I think he was. They would call like businesses and bring them in for computer training, and they also did. At that time, if somebody was, if they got IBM certified, an IBM certified systems engineer, it was like a big deal, and they had this training for those types of people, and he was there, so we, you know, walked down the hallway, bumped into each other a lot, and went out for drinks with him, that sort of thing. The crew, the gang, got to know him a little bit that way. Funny, fun guy. He had a lot of great stories. Absolutely. So, I was thinking about this pool house thing.
Yes. Yeah, it's
all
happening.
Right. So, if I at any point you say, just shut up about the pool house.
No. I it's my life. If I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to talk about it. My only fear about talking about it is, I don't want to step on your toes and, you know, like you tell me about what's going on. You tend to tell more stories from the past, not the present. I mean, sometimes, but I go a little deeper with my bullshit.
With your current bullshit?
Current bullshit, yeah. That's how I work through shit.
So you're not gonna unpack anything for the most part. You're gonna try to go with this minimalist thing.
No, well, not exactly. No. So I'm sitting here right now. I'm sitting here in my bedroom, soon to be just an empty room that someone else lives in. And I'm looking around. I'm going like, fuck. All right, I've got my ghost bed, king size mattress. All right, that's going in the basement, I guess. The platform for the bed is metal. I bought it on Amazon. I'll take that apart, store that as well. Underneath there, I don't know what's in there. A bunch of shit, a bunch of stuff. Fuck, what do I need that's under there? I'd be like, I have a photography job on Tuesday. I've got to go into the city and shoot something. I need my lights. I need my camera. Okay, I just need certain gear. I'm like looking. I'm like, so I need that. My iMac that is just I need that. Like, I need that to edit photos. The microphone. I guess if we're going to record, I should have the microphone. You know, like certain things. And I'm like, oh, shit, all that. Like, there's just boxes with stuff in it. There's, like, electronics. There's all this stuff on dressers because I took all the shelves down. So they're not on shelves anymore. So I've got all these hard drives. I'm like, oh, shit, I do need to go through those hard drives and do a little bit of organization. So I'll have those. But I'm not going to have a lot of time because all I want to do is work. Like Rihanna, you know, says. And so it's not a full minimalist thing. I was hoping to get through stuff, to like actually purge stuff, but it's time consuming to go through boxes and papers and shit. I mean, and if I just go for it, I'll just start throwing everything away, which maybe I should. I threw away a 1-inch black and white Panasonic television. VHF, UHF television that was a gift for Christmas in like 1984 or 5 when I was like 1985 when I was a freshman in high school. It was a Christmas gift, and I used to watch the Brady Bunch in my English class. My English class teacher did not like it. It doesn't work. It's just static.
Are you hanging on to parachute pants or anything like that?
I don't have clothing. I'm afraid to look in my closet and see the oldest article of clothing that I have. You know, like, oh shit, that's 20 years old. There's no reason to keep that, you know. Bunch of jeans I don't wear. I've gotten rid of them before. You know, like, there's so much. The good thing is that my friend Ray's golf swing shirt van has a hanger, you know, like a, what do you call that thing? The thing that's in the closet with the
wardrobe.
You know, it's just a metal rod that you can hang because he has golf swing shirts that are on hangers to events and shows, right? So I can actually, I can just take everything from my closets and my kids' closet, and just hang them in there and then get to it on the other side. My goal is to get the fuck out of here, right? It's Sunday. My lease is up at the end of February 28th, Wednesday.
Right, Wednesday.
I have to work all on Tuesday in Manhattan. So it's like, shit, I also wanted to, and I have not really, in the last couple of days, I haven't really driven Uber or Lyft because my head's just here dealing with this. So, I don't know, minimalist, not quite a minimalist, like a real minimalist would be like, you know, fucking, that'd be like, you know, me saying I'm a vegan and then, you know, I have eggs and butter with toast, you know, be like, you're not fucking vegan, you're an asshole, you're just saying, I'm not a minimalist, it's just going to be me, a laptop, and this microphone.
Not a vegan activist at all.
No, and I'm only, from this point forward, I'm only wearing wingtips, shirt stays, boxer shorts and a fucking dickie.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show. Let's let Mr. Big Voice take us out.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed Unbecoming of Age. Bonus content at unbecomingofage.com. Subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Find us on social media at Unbecoming of Age.
And sometimes when we touch...